Right. Banner headline this morning on the front page of the Daily Guide: Mahama to remove EC chair and deputies. That's quite declarative from the Daily Guide. I think there's a process to be gone through if indeed petitions have been submitted for the removal of the EC chair and deputies. But the Daily Guide goes straight to the end and says Mahama to remove them. Okay, U.S. lifts 15% tariffs on Ghana's agric products. Now, this is some welcome news for farmers who farm for export. And yeah, thank goodness for that. 15% tariff lifted. Okay, court orders Bandai parliamentary polls rerun. Maybe one of these days we need to talk about the number of reruns and outstanding results and how long it takes to correct some of these anomalies in our electoral processes. Small-scale mining contributes 53% gold, and that comes to about $9 billion of forex, and that's according to Sammy Jemfi of the Gold Board. Two get life in prison for killing cop. That's also on the front page of the Daily Guide.
Let's take you to the Daily Graphic now. Attaining food security, government ends seeds imports. Farmers to get local varieties only from 2026. This is according to the Minister of Food and Agriculture, Eric Opoku. He was at the Government Accountability Series yesterday. He said quite a lot of things. We'll be sharing some with you. One of the things he said was we are building processing factories to ensure that when there is glut, we process and we have food all year round. We are going to cut the sod for a poultry processing factory in the Bono region this week, Thursday. Mm. And then some other things, the weather stations and all those things. We'll be sharing details of that with you.
It all gives a sense of deja vu, doesn't it? Ateda.
Oh, why? I say Ateda, but this is a new dispensation.
Anyway,
at least it says government is ending seed imports and we are going to distribute only local varieties of seeds from 2026, which is good for seed producers locally. They will get a market, and the money we use to bring seeds from abroad will be kept in country.
Is this the first time you've heard this?
This is the first time I think government is going to do 100% local seeds.
Okay,
we usually import.
Okay.
We import seeds and then we complement with our local seeds. Now, the chief of staff is here and he's talking to all men. And he says we should prioritize our health and we should exercise regularly. Mm. Okay, International Men's Week. Last week we were at MTN and they did a great job for the International Men's Week. And Graphic Business Stanbic Bank breakfast meeting today. We'll bring you more on that. And Express share mixed views on lifestyle audit law. There are people who say we should immediately institute that. There are some people who say, well, let's tarry. And so I'll share that story also with you. But there's something.
I have a view about that. Well, when we get to it.
There's something hidden on page 7 of the Daily Graphic. I think this should have been on the front page. How Tesano Ofanko police condoned near femicide. And this is an account of how the police were not proactive and it could have ended in some tragedy. I'll share that story with you also. Mm. And the U.S. reverses 15% tariff on cocoa products, others, according to Ablakwa. And he says that this is good news for us. It's opened about $60 million worth of exports to us. And we're also working on renewing AGOA to take opportunities of trading in the U.S. And Ghana secures $81 million World Bank fund for agric inputs. This is the minister telling Parliament.
Well, the new finder for this morning says gold holds above $4,060 as traders await key U.S. economic data. Financial expert urges stronger push for value-added exports. And Ghana to earn extra $60 million annually as U.S. lifts 15% tariff on cocoa exports. IFC World Bank says Ghana can revive capital market growth. All on the front page of the new finder.
Now, if you go to the New Republic, there's a photo of Natoshi on the front page, and the story says Natoshi ignites NPP civil war. Ooh. Primpag, you know why? So they went to the Ashanti region to campaign, and Samira was also there campaigning. And so the story is that Samira had to end her campaign because they didn't want to clash.
Why? They have a problem.
they don't, but you know the MPP campaigns, is they were given instructions that the regional offices should coordinate these things so that maybe if there's this candidate here this week, then next week, but they don't want them. So that's one of the stories. So now Toshi ignites NPP civil war, pins 2024 defeat on Baumier's stingy formulas and Ofoate's empty coffers. That's how the New Republic puts the story.
You know, I've heard Kenneth Japon speaking, and anytime I hear him speak, he says, unity in tea. And you know, you hear Baumier also make the point, you know, that bold ideas, it's not all about money. Brian Achampo is talking about the things he's done and all of that. You can now understand why the NPP wanted to have this done very early. Because if they had waited till, say, 2020, latter part of 2026, it'd be a problem for them.
Right. Well, there are two views to that. Because some also suggest that perhaps by 2026, one of these people might have naturally emerged as a leader around which the party can rally in a more united way to avoid some of the, you know, back and forth that we're seeing today.
I'll tell you something. I think that the NPP itself at some point has become a bit confused, because the NPP's leader is not the flag bearer or a presidential candidate or the president. And when the party went for its conference, it was stated clearly that the party's leader is the party's chairman. So whenever I hear people saying, you sometimes even hear people introducing Dr. Baumier when he was contesting as leader of the NPP. But that's all because, you see, the last 16 years, the hold President Akufo-Addo had on the NPP was huge. And so for many people, and you heard, for instance, Freddie Blay write on this station when the NPP was getting ready for the 2014 primary, when the party had indicated that no executive member of the party should openly declare his support, and people were declaring for Akufo-Addo. Freddie Blay, then as first vice chairman, said that some rules are better violated than adhered to. And that was one of those rules. Yes, and you see, so that actually, I remember Evans Mensah did that interview. That whole period, because of the hold Akufo-Addo had on the NPP, it's convinced many to believe that the flag bearer is de facto leader of the NPP, when the flag bearer is supposed to, and there's been instances, look, go to the era of Peter Alajete and others, and you would understand the power that the national chairman of the NPP at the time had. Anyway, let's get
anyway, other stories from the New Republic. Primpac backs Mahama's media fund revival. Ofoate's trial in limbo. SML demands probing OSP mismanagement case. And Eric Opoku's irrigation drive revives Akufo-Addo flops. And there's a group that is demanding 85% stake in lithium. They are urging parliament to reject the deal so Ghana can have 85% stake in our lithium.
Insight for this morning says Mahama Cares pops up at International Men's Day. Nada and corruption, beg your pardon, NPP's Arthur Kennedy writes, and chases ex-president to the Pratt River. Deteriorating Esipon Sports Stadium needs urgent attention. Kofi Adams, and going green is the new way, says Alhaji Salam Amadou as he leads youth-focused EV initiative. NHIA projects over 120% increase in tariff to boost service delivery in 2026, and Ghana Post CEO unveils vision for sustainable and inclusive postal system. You know, the bit about the Esipon Sports Stadium. You know, while I was in Takrad, you know that stadium actually had other facilities. It had a number of rooms that could be used as even as a lodging place. So, for instance, if you had somebody going to Takrad, you could actually get the person to check into the Esipon Sports Stadium. It had other facilities that was open to the public. Unfortunately, we turned a blind eye and nobody cared until everything went bad. Now we're going to start all over again. But the question is, what plans have we put in place to ensure that this doesn't happen again? Let's go for the online news review.
And the big story on my Joy Online, MIF board blows 11 million Ghana cedis on unapproved foreign trips as confidential audit exposes massive breach. That story is there on my Joy Online. EC staffer behind petition against Jean Mensah and deputy's removal interdicted. So the person who petitioned the president to remove Auntie Jill and the other two. The story says he's been interdicted. And,
Before the petition.
Yes.
Anyway,
yes.
That's before the petition he was interdicted.
Yes. Right. Attorney General backs Wesley Girls Senior High School in Supreme Court case over alleged religious discrimination. The Democracy Hub has joined themselves to this case.
Okay.
Yes. And
on which side?
That's if on Shafiq's side.
Okay.
Yes. On the fact that we should have freedom of religion.
Yeah.
You know, our friend Umar Sander also wrote something on Facebook about Temasco, how they've tried to build a worship place for Muslims there, and it was approved, but the old students' president says now they can't be given land to set it up, because if every other religious group in the school decides that they also want land to build their place of worship, their shrines and everything, it will be chaos. So
you know, when I was in
there's something, forgive me just a moment before you come in, Winston. There's something you should pay attention to throughout history.
Yeah,
right. At any time just before a certain institutionalized discrimination is overcome, the final defense of the bigots is if you give them their rights, there will be chaos because everybody else will want their rights.
Mm.
Just pay attention. Go through it. Before women got the vote,
mm-hmm.
that was exactly what those who were opposed to it said. If women get the vote, then next, who else are we going to give the vote to?
Mm-hmm.
Before slavery was abolished, same thing. In the 60s, civil rights movement. Same thing. Every time, just before the front breaks, the last hope of the bigot is that, if you give them their rights, there will be chaos.
Okay, hold on. Let me read this post by Kofi Bento.
Mm-hmm.
Kofi wrote this on Facebook 11 hours ago that if you are going to allow all religions to be practiced freely in secondary schools, please remember those who practice animal sacrifices and pouring libation. Tuesday is their day of worship. You also need some consideration too.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. And when I was in Maoli school, the church service was a school function. And so every student had to be present at school functions.
Compulsory.
It's compulsory.
Mm-hmm.
But I also knew that, and Mali's an EP school, I also knew that there was the Catholic Students Union,
mm-hmm.
and they could meet.
Yeah.
There were Muslims on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I did not at any point hear that they've been prevented from praying.
Mm.
But what I knew was that it was compulsory for them to be at worship, which was a school function.
Mm.
Because anybody who doesn't show up at a school function will be punished.
That wasn't the case at Kumasi High School.
Oh, okay.
Sunday church services were only reserved for the Christians. But every Christian would have to go for the Sunday church service.
Okay.
The Muslims would then go and gather at their place of worship to have their edification sessions and whatever it is, right? And then Sunday evening, the individual denominations could then go and have their... So Catholics will go, Methodists will go, everybody would have their own service. Could you on the line? Franklin, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. How are you?
It's good to hear your voice. How was your trip to the north, Salaga and Tamale? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, without a doubt. It was wonderful. Thank you.
I saw your post. And have you seen any changes to the fortunes of the people up north based on your observations when you traveled there?
Obviously, the fortunes first must change, right? But I think it builds on... the people there, they have good leaders. They have too many leaders to have a water facility treatment, water treatment plant that is over 50 years old, and it's cranky, it doesn't work. The whole of Tamale Metropolis, I'm sure it's just about less than a quarter of people get water from that treatment plant. It's a shame, really, and I hope that they do something quick and fast.
Anyway.
I mean, but otherwise, the people are wonderful. I was at the UDS because we wanted to have a conversation with them about how to bring some of these our pedagogical, economic lessons and economic education to the university up north. There were other interesting visits as well. And
nice,
I was hosted
nice.
Pretty well by my good friend, the paramount chief of Dalum.
This is Franklin Cudjoe. Wow. Giving us a report from his trip to the north. Talking about water. Ghana is so much water, we don't have water. Yesterday, I had about five different people calling me that for the past 1 month, they've not really received water through their taps. But that's not what we are talking about this morning. We are talking about the Wesley girls issue. The AG says that the action of Wesley girls is justified. And he's rejecting the assertion that the school's policies are unlawful. This issue is something that you both have been following. I want to start from you, Godfred Bobkin. Are you surprised by the AG's position? What do you think about this position by the AG?
Well, yeah, good morning once again. And good morning to my senior friend, Imani, our president. Good morning. So, well, I'm not surprised. I think that is largely consistent with the expectations of stakeholders. To be curious why the focus is on Wesley girls. We want to look at the implications of this broadly beyond just Wesley girls. If you look at Ghana's history, our socioeconomic development, even before independence, the role of the church in terms of our socioeconomic development, you cannot discount that religious bodies and all of that. We need to just also understand that they have invested. And therefore, we need to create a certain framework that allows religious bodies to invest as a way of also entrenching the sustainability of their faith and all of that. Within the dynamics, the context is also very important. Because beyond Wesley girls, churches, religious bodies have invested across kindergarten, basic, junior high school, senior high schools, even across universities, and all of them. They do all of these things for a purpose and all of that. And yes, and these are investments that is made. Beyond that, you also want to look at the other layer in terms of vocational training institutions that they have equally invested in and all of that. There's a reason for doing all of that. Again, you also want to look at it within the health sector in terms of health facilities delivery. Beyond that, skills training, empowerment, and all of that. There are others who are building prisons as we speak currently and all of that. So we need to look at the implications of this within a certain framework that allows religious bodies to invest, of course, to aid national development, but also for their faith. And then also the dynamics. I mean, we also want to look at the overwhelming majority of people who are in the school and all of that. So I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And I want to believe that welfare, maybe for now, it looks as though the focus is Wesley girls and all of that. But I think we need to look at the broader implications and take our history into consideration, even before independence and afterwards. If you track the data and you look at the level of investment and all of that, and the role that they have played in terms of moral unbreaking, integrity, and all of that, I think it's beyond just looking at it with respect to Wesley girls. Yeah.
Mm. Prof, I think you're very right when you point to the heavy investment that these missions have made in schools and other aspects of society.
Yeah, and hospitals. Our health
hospital, sector. Yes. But, yeah. Prof, does that investment buy them the right to discriminate against people?
Look at it this way, that there are options. Other religious bodies will put up mosques or churches for a purpose. They would invest for a purpose. It doesn't preclude the state from also investing, okay, and for purposes of serving other interests or other religious bodies investing appropriately and all of that. So I think that is the perspective that we should look at it from. They are mission schools. There have been calls, and I think I subscribe to that as well, largely to that extent. But let's return the mission schools to the churches. They probably can manage it better. But we also recognize that a certain partnership between the state and religious bodies will be good. remember that we are incredibly religious and all of that. I started life as a Muslim, but I'm a Christian now, and I'm grateful that Christ came into my life. Those dynamics would always play out, so we should not create certain tensions and all of that. To the extent that it is possible, fine. If it is not, I think we should not look at the law and all of that. I think we should engage more. We should also encourage greater investment in this direction to complement government efforts in our socioeconomic development. So to that extent, I think that, yes, I will go with Attorney General's position, and I think that that would largely be consistent with the broader perspective.
Frankly, let's bring you in. You know, the question is that, you know, a person or an institution or an organization obviously has rights. And the concept is that you can exercise your rights as long as you don't infringe on the rights of others. The question here is, if a Muslim goes to Wesley Girls or any other school, let's not make it about only Wesley Girls. You know, if a Muslim goes to a mission school and says their prayers, does that infringe on the rights of the mission school? Also, if a mission school says a Muslim cannot say their prayers, does that infringe on the rights of the Muslim? I wonder how you see this perspective.
This is rather sad and strange at the same time. You know, I attended Catholic schools throughout, from the O level to the A level, Pope John's and St. Mary Junior Seminary.
Yeah.
Back in St. Mary's, between 1989 and 1994, I think we had a few Muslims. There was this famous guy called Issa Adamu, good friend of ours. And I think there was a time that he, more or less, he had a hell of a time at some point. I remember the headmaster, some priest, telling him that, look, you better conform. You need to come to church and then later go and pray. I never, even at that age, understood the sense in that particular idea. Because I said, well, this guy is a Muslim. He should be allowed to do whatever he does. The only reason why I probably understood why the authorities wanted me to be part of the church was because they said, well, I mean, they didn't want anybody loitering about, right? I mean, church, it rules, whatever, rules, just come in there and do whatever you want to do. Because you elected to be part of the school, you know? I found it quite ludicrous and, quite frankly, an abuse of people's freedoms and rights. Much as I agree that, look, you knew before you entered, it's a bit too much for me. You know, look, even in the Catholic Church, and you know the Catholic actually means universal, we accommodate other faiths. I mean, mostly we accommodate Muslims, right? Remember, I think in the Vatican, there's some place for accommodating other faiths. I don't know, but anyway, I need to be educated though. I don't know those people who went to the Tia Ahmadiyya secondary school, were they also asked to conform? I don't know. I've never really found that out. Maybe people can, those listening can actually educate us as well. Is it the case that you are told once you're in the Catholic or in the Islamic school, you definitely have to conform? I don't know. So, frankly, I'm a libertarian. I'm totally not really in for sectarianism or sectarian interests, whether they be religious, they be, you know, other faiths. It's difficult for me.
Mm.
Of course, if there are many, I'm struggling. Look, I was in the university. Hold on.
Yeah.
One last point. Even in the university, I recall one time I was working with our head of department once. I won't mention his name now, but and then he made a very made an interesting point. He said, "Before we had adults, were how?" I was like, "What? What the hell? What is this guy talking about?" And I was asking myself,
What's the point? You know, I don't understand. Maybe I'm too liberal. I don't know. But frankly, I would not. I don't think it's fair. I mean, I really don't think it's fair. We should do a bit more to accommodate people. Like I said, I should be educated as to whether other Islamic schools also have this very sectarian practice. Thank you.
There is an interesting argument that comes up in similar issues. I heard it when young Tyrone Magai was trying to attend Achimota School with his dreadlocks. This argument that, well, if you allow one group to have their rights, then you must allow all other groups to have their rights. So very soon, then those who sacrifice animals for rituals as part of their religion will also ask for time to do that in school, and all other, you know, from Hindus to Buddhists, they will all request, you know, special times for prayers in school, and then there will be chaos. It always ends with that claim that there will be chaos. I don't know, what is your take on that?
No, I've never really believed in that. Look, when we're in the university, we had a non-denominational services as well. I mean, I could go to the Lighthouse. I could go to other churches. In fact, I ran away once when they said, put your hand in your pocket, collect the money, and I said, I'm going back to my Catholic church. But of course, I enjoyed the praise. The praise and worship was lively, you know, you dance around, you sort of gyrate and all of that. But I loved it, you know. The only thing I didn't like is the money. As a young man, I didn't have enough money. They tell you, put your hand here, put your hand there. I didn't like it. Look, non-denominational services are very important, and we should be having some of them. I don't even think we should leave this. I don't think it is right, or it is even true that there'll be chaos. I don't think chaos is the right word to use. I really struggle. Maybe if we are not, for example, if we allow everybody to do whatever they want to do under strict guidance, why not? I don't think the Muslim faith by praying will be breaking tables and chairs. The same way I don't think when Christians are praying in school, they'll be breaking chairs and tables. There must be rules. Mm. And I think that's the only thing that should matter. Otherwise, really, can we really fit in this country? Isn't Ghana, Ghana is not a homogeneous, more or less, country. We have Muslims, we have other faiths, we have Christians, even though we are more. And aren't we living peacefully together? Is there been chaos? Except, of course, the pacifists, those religious fundamentalists in other parts of the world. By the way, they are Christian, both fundamentalists, by the way, are Christians who have told people to drink poison and die with them, or even married as many, many hundreds of people. Yeah. I mean, we've had all these lunatics in the past, just as they are in other Christian faith, just as they are in other faiths as well. I think we should be working towards tolerance and reducing as much as possible the opportunities to be suspicious of each other.
Frankly, let me move to Prof. Bobkin. So, Prof., I'm looking at the broader implications of the stance of the Attorney General. For example, you have the Pentecost Church, which has also invested in a lot of schools, hospitals, even prisons, right? We have different institutions which have invested in a lot of things. In fact, if you look at the distribution of the TI Amar schools, aside the one in Kumasi, I know the ones in the Gomoa areas, they have quite a lot of schools also around, which serve the general populations because of the geographic location of these. So if any group, or if all the groups decide that if this is the stance, then maybe Catholic Pentecost Church, the prisons we help to fund, we only want to have Christians in there because we don't want Muslims to come and pray in the prisons. Our hospitals are going to have only several people of our faith. Would that not actually be chaotic?
No, because that's not the purpose. These churches invest as a way of also propagating their faith.
Yeah.
So it is, I don't think it's going to be the case. that they will say only Christians who can come there to serve their dead or something and all of that. Don't forget that even within the traditional prison system, churches have been visiting and investing in reformative measures, complementing government effort and all of that. So it's a mission school. It's a mission hospital. It's a mission training institution.
At the moment, it really is not a mission school. It was a school started by a mission which has been absorbed into the state system.
The state, from day one, recognizes the important role of the churches. And the way to go is that kind of coexistence, partnership, and all of that. But I think that we should be moving towards a framework that allows religious bodies to also invest appropriately, okay, as a way of also complementing the state whilst they seek to achieve their goal. Look, when it comes to this particular issue, you realize that there is always a contest, and we should not open the Pandora's box to the extent that every serious religious body wouldn't want to give up its space. They wouldn't want to. You have to go to other countries where one particular religion dominates and observe what happens and all of that all over the world. Whether even others that are not so religious, so to speak, they also have what they believe in, their culture. You can talk about the Asians and the rest of them. So there are dynamics that we need to recognize.
So Prof, what you are saying is that we need to encourage partnerships without denying the institutions the opportunity to keep whether it's their religious or cultural beliefs.
We need to, and also there are options. Look, don't forget, Methodist Church has invested. They will not give up. Presby has invested. They will not give up. Pentecost has invested. They will not give up. Other religious bodies have also invested at different levels and all of that. They will also not easily give up.
But they Prof, will always be. Would allowing a Muslim to attend your
why
school,
is the
would that constitute
Muslim?
Giving up?
Hijab?
Would that constitute
why
giving up?
Muslims? Why are we pitting Muslims against
Christians? That's the example we have. That's the example we have in the Wesley Girls issue. That's why I'm sticking to it. But I'm saying, so if Wesley Girls allows a Muslim to attend Wesley Girls and say their prayers, does that constitute giving up? What is Wesley Girls giving up?
Remember, there's a reason why they invested to have a mission school. They built infrastructure. They acquired the land. There's a reason. Look, even other religious bodies where overwhelming majority are of other faith and all of that, where normally, and even the level of investment does not measure here and there. I'm saying that nobody wants to give up. We can negotiate, we can discuss and all of that. But that's what I'm saying, that why is the focus on Wesley Girls? There are kindergartens, there are basic, primary, junior, senior, even all the way to the universities where religious bodies have set up universities and all of that. So the question is the space that they all want to. But I also believe that we need to understand, situate this well within our fiscal space and the complementarity rule that, so we don't highlight some of these tensions so much. Of course, on the quiet, some people would want to negotiate, push through, discuss, so can we have some kind of this and all of that. But I believe that we should create that space for religious freedom, which also implies that a religious body can invest as a way of also propagating its faith and all of that. But in that same sphere, they are serving the common good and all of that. So those are the dynamics. I believe that we need to look at it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the wider implication within the health sector, within so many other sectors and all of that, and if Pentecost is building prisons, I think that the focus will not be that they only accept Christians into that prison and all of that. Even beyond that, there are
evangelism scholarships and other things that the other religious bodies would offer without looking at whether you are a member of the church or the religious body or so and all of that. But I think that we need to just understand the history, the concept, and also the fact that there is space for other religious bodies to equally invest in terms of our socioeconomic development and all of that. And then we make progress.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Prof. Bobkin. Thank you, Franklin Kujo, for your perspectives on this particular issue. We await the action in the Supreme Court and the ruling that the Supreme Court will give to this particular case for further conversations later here on the Super Morning Show. But thank you and have a great day. It's 9:44. We are going for a quick break.